This is another episode of Dear Analyst, and today I am super excited to invite Workera Yeomans. She is the Director of Global Customer Lifecycle and Engagement at a company called Showpad, and she'll tell us more about what that means. But Workera, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, Al. I'm excited to be here.
And like many folks I've talked to on the episode, on the podcast, you have a non-traditional data background. I was wondering if you could tell us more about what you've done in the past and how it led to your current career in the data world.
Yeah, absolutely. I would probably say that I found data later in life. I did start my career as a graphic designer, actually, and I came out of school with an art degree and really kind of fell in love with the role that design plays in understanding empathy for you know the users you're designing things for. And I think that that same empathy for people that we're creating things for has really propelled me into looking at data as a way for us to just understand. So kind of the way my path went, I became a designer. I was working at a big agency, moved into kind of a smaller agency that focused on email marketing, which I thought would be super boring after a few years, but turns out it became this huge career path for me, and also where I started to understand the way that you could see how your creative ideas performed. So you were able to kind of get to know, you know, what was making people click, what was getting people to actually open and engage with things. And so that was really kind of the beginning of understanding how all these different things I found important were kind of coming together. But kind of fast forward, I really did a lot of work on understanding the data and marketing, you know, doing work to really understand the business I was running. At one point, I was running a $10 million creative services department at Oracle. And so I had to understand data from a business standpoint. But then as I got later in my career, I found that because my background was in creative, people assumed I didn't understand data and numbers. And so that was also where I thought it was important for me to start to look at making sure that I was getting accredited or finding ways to make sure that I fully understood all the concepts and thoughts. And that kind of led me to this amazing data science bootcamp that I completed last year that has just really kind of been this amazing catalyst for a lot of cool and interesting things I've been working on.
Cool. And you currently work at Showpad. I'm curious, how does data getting integrated into your current role?
Yeah, for sure. So at Showpad, I came on as the Global Director of Lifecycle and Engagement. And typically within lifecycle of a customer, you kind of have to understand what stage your customer is in, how they're engaging with your product. You also, from the prospect side, need to understand where they are in the buying cycle. And all of that really does tie back to data. So I've been up to my eyeballs in Salesforce data to really truly understand what the customer journey is. And I think what's important is organizations kind of get in the habit of certain anecdotes kind of stand the test of time inside an organization. And as I newly joined Showpad, I really just wanted to get to the numbers to understand what was real in reality. And so one of the first projects I embarked on was building these customer profiles. And it was the first time anything like this had been done before at the company, so I'm told. But what I really wanted to do was find a way to understand the different groups of our customers. How are they similar and how are they different? And even just looking at how much each of them spend each year with us, what's the size of company that fits in each of those different groups and categories, the way that we've organized them, was super important and valuable information to really level set across the organization. And then as I started to dig deeper, I was able to combine a variety of different data sources. So I brought over all of our customer satisfaction data from our NPS scores, started to combine it with other data about our product usage, and brought all these disparate data sources together in a way that gave us a better view of who our customers are that we hadn't had all in one place before.
Got it. And I guess maybe we can dig a little deeper into this customer profile project. How did you first, I guess, so you had one data source and you started combining other data sources together. How did you, what techniques or maybe tools did you use to figure out the best ways to combine everything? Was it kind of based off of like an email address or a customer ID to create that kind of overarching profile?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is where I was so grateful that I completed the data science bootcamp because I had learned how to do a lot of this stuff using Python. But also I've been using Excel my whole career too. So there was Gotta love Excel. Always comes back to Excel. So one thing I was actually grateful for was because we were doing it by company, the number of rows or the amount of data I was dealing with wasn't huge. It was actually small enough that I could do it in Excel. And so I was able to, I pulled the most current list of customers that I could find and use that. Basically the company name is a unique identifier. And from there was able to match it to other sources. So for example, in our tool that we use that we capture NPS, it's a running joke internally, but the data field in there is actually, it's called name, but it's actually the account and not like a person. And so you have to, I had to like really start to parse out like what all our data fields meant and who created them. And it was kind of a running joke about having like data field bingo of like, this field means this and it's a green light, you can use it. This field is a red light, don't use it. Just starting to keep track of where we could find all the data pieces that we needed to tell different stories. But to your question, I ended up bringing them into Excel, like exporting them out for the moment and using XLOOKUP and trying to kind of parse together things and then creating all these different tables that I could pull from so that I could do calculated fields in the different tab and then bring it all into the master tab. And usually this is, I think, kind of called like a customer placemat, or that's what we called it also at my previous job. So we have like one big, basically like all of the, all the customer profiles side by side. So you can see all the calculated fields and everything all in one place. And my goal next is to move it into, we use Salesforce as most tech companies do for all of our CRM data. But there's a really great connector in Google Sheets where you can pull live data from Salesforce into Google Sheets.
Is it like an add-on or a paid plugin or something? Okay.
Yeah, it's an add-on. It's phenomenal. So you can actually go through there and search and find your most recent Salesforce reports and import them into a Google Sheet. And you can have automatic refreshes of that data and or manually refresh the data. So I've been using that now to kind of rebuild other reports. And my goal is to move our customer profiles to that format so that way it can be more accessible to everybody in the company. And we can share that information more broadly.
I was just going to ask you, because when you originally put everything into Excel and you had different tabs for the placemat, so were people just kind of looking at that Excel file originally before the Google Sheets solution? Because eventually you want to be able to share that analysis with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely, this is where being a designer, I think, also comes in handy. So kind of two things. I made a PDF of version of it and kind of hit all the grid lines and everything. So it actually looks like a design document.
Okay. That's cool.
As the first tab. And then you can set the print settings so that it comes out exactly on a sheet of paper or however you want to set it up, landscape or portrait. And then in addition to that, I was building visualizations in slides. So starting to create the different ways of representing each of those data fields, so that people could easily compare them. So I know it's hard to describe on a podcast, but just kind of being familiar with all the ways to, you can't see it, but identify where like the common, like where the index is for everybody within all your different segments and how each segment compares to the index, allow someone to quickly look at that and understand how this segment differs from another. So I know we'll probably talk about it at some point, but one of the things I love about data is the visualization aspect and the storytelling and how do you get that information across really quickly, because obviously I'm grateful to have the skills to pull all the data together myself, but at the end of the day, I need it in a format that other people can understand.
Yeah, that's definitely probably the most important part of the final output of this is how you tell that story to your internal stakeholders, your customers, et cetera. One final kind of question on this project was, what kind of feedback were you getting from people who are using the customer placemat? How did it change the way they work? I'm curious what kind of downstream impact it kind of had on people's day-to-day activities.
Yeah, absolutely. It showed up in a variety of things. So one, I definitely road tested it with people who could point out if any of the data was incorrect. I think it's so important to make sure that you get it validated. It impacted a lot of different areas. So for example, our product team, the people that are building the actual software, one of our tools had there were some really interesting pieces I was able to pull out about the other technology our customers use around our product. And that was really valuable for our product team. So they understand where integrations need to be made and if we do or don't have strong connection points between those integrations. The woman who runs our events team was really excited because she started to better understand too, which company, if we Salesforce is our number one integrator. And so that helped her be I need to be at the Salesforce events and we need to be, drawing a lot of, really helped kind of direct a lot of things that kind of clicked for people that they hadn't seen before. And I think it's been incredibly valuable for new hires to kind of leapfrog in understanding the business because we just don't have a place like this for people to understand what percentage of our revenue comes from which part of our product. All that kind of stuff was just here it is in a snackable form of this is the snapshot of what our business looks like today and could save tons of meetings and time in that way. It's also going to be the foundation for some of the customer journeys we'll be building. So my goal is to take the data views, marry it with the research that our product marketing team has been doing and start to put together these fully fledged profiles that have both the quantitative side and the qualitative side. And then we can really better understand who our customers are.
Got it. Really cool. It's amazing to see how many different people and teams this project affects. So kudos to you on getting that project off the ground. Wanted to shift gears a little bit and move on to another project you had mentioned in our previous call, which was customer stories for Abercrombie and Fitch. And I would love to have for you to kind of detail more about what this means in the context of your previous work.
Yeah, absolutely. Similar, what I loved about coming to Showpad was I just finished these projects with Abercrombie and Fitch. So it really helped lay a groundwork for what this could look like. And I have examples and all of that. But it was really interesting because I came into that role as an experienced strategist, which usually somebody who would build a journey. But I was also simultaneously going through the data science bootcamp. And one of the kind of main shifts we had in the project was we received all of our research back from our research vendor as raw data. So we had done a survey out to thousands of people. And what we received back were two Excel files with 250 tabs a piece.
Wow.
And we needed to turn those into insights.
What was on every single tab? Why were there so many tabs?
One question across 9 different segment answers.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay.
And then any of the different, we did a couple different slices of the answers. So we had built out just this whole way that we had asked for reporting from the survey. So we wanted to cut it by ages, by demographic data, and get the answers back with all those different cuts. And so unfortunately we had to do a lot of very manual work to get all that together. And it was a funny moment in time because I was I think I know how to combine CSV files together with Python. And I think I stayed up all night and made one mega file, but it was actually ended up not being the most helpful, but I was okay, so I can figure things out in real life, even while I'm in this bootcamp. So that was super helpful. But I was working with a woman on our data and analytics team. Cause again, in this scenario, I was more on the UX side and not as a data person. But what was super cool is we had done this thing called a driver's analysis. And that was, again, something I'd never heard of before. And just to reiterate, like you can learn anything on YouTube. I think I watched like 3 YouTube tutorials on how to conduct a driver's analysis based on the data you had. And from there I went and I was able to actually plot out the analysis. And what that what it is you ask people what's important to them. And then you ask them how satisfied they are of, you know, those same kind of topics. So for us, it was like, how important is gene fit? How important is the store experience? And then how satisfied are you with each of those things? And what was great was we could really see the delta between how important and how satisfied customers were, which gave us numeric ways to score what was important and impacting their overall experience in the journey. And it really helped kind of solidify a mathematical way that we could show like the impact to the business by solving these problems for these customers. So one example you could see when shopping in store, certain things were way more important than shopping online, but also the things online were having like a much poorer experience. And so we could start to really give them strong recommendations on what to do as a business around solving those kinds of problems.
That's super interesting. So it's kind of like, I'm just thinking out loud, is it kind of like a different way of, like a different version of NPS to get people's kind of gut reactions on how they feel about something?
Yeah, because, you know, direct to consumer companies, when they're collecting NPS, it's kind of at that customer service level. But, you know, when you're able to survey and really, you know, get questions in front of customers in that, you know, mega view, it is important to ask those kinds of questions that you can analyze on the back end and really drive business decisions from, because we did have some questions that we probably didn't learn as much from as we thought we might have. But I think those importance and satisfaction questions proved to be the diamonds in that entire survey and data analysis experience.
Got it. Well, definitely we'll have to, I'm probably going to go on YouTube afterwards and see what this driver analysis is all about.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is like when it's done well, technically you can layer in predictability and start to identify if these things actually impact whether or not a person will complete an action. So that's kind of like the next step of it when you have those more advanced data science skills. But at least I could do the business version relatively quickly in a weekend.
Got it. And was this analysis also just in an Excel file, then you might've PDF'd it, or was there other tools involved?
No, it was a major part of the journey. So one of the things that I appreciated about working with the Abercrombie clients was they were really insistent that our journey almost be a data visualization. And so even within, you know, people see journeys all the time and there's kind of, you know, the person goes to the mall and they blah, blah, blah. But what was cool is because we had all this research, we could say like new shoppers, they go to the mall, 55% use the window display as a way to make decisions. When they go to the mall, the top stores they visit are XYZ, and we had them all from the survey and from our other research we had conducted. So the entire thing was a giant data story of each customer's experience. And I created them for 9 different customer like segments essentially. And that really created this opportunity to say like, to validate, you know, those anecdotes like I was talking about earlier, but also find those moments where it's like, hey, you don't know this customer as well as you think you do, because this is a behavior we're seeing in the data and in our research. And one of the ones that was kind of a funny one that kept showing up was Hollister is a very specifically teenaged brand. But in our data, we saw quite frequently the moms buying things for themselves in the store and as a part of that shopping experience. And this leads to a point that I think is important as we're all working in data. It was a very interesting conversation because it didn't align with what the business, like obviously they're not going to cater to moms with the Hollister brand, but our responsibility as the data stewards is to make sure that that data is brought to the forefront and that we're not discarding this experience because there is value there. And I think even though it's not the, it's, you know, it could be classified as an outlier, right? But it is important when we're looking at outliers that you as the person doing the analysis understand when to throw it away and when it's important to have it be a part of the story and not dismiss it.
Got it. And I guess, how did you know that this quote unquote outlier was important to present? Did it reach some level of, like, I don't know, statistical significance, or what gave you the confidence that this is something we have to show to Abercrombie and Fitch?
I think the repetitiveness of it showing up as an outlier was important. So it showed up both in our survey data, also in our, we did focus groups. And so it came out in the verbatims from those research pieces. And then we also saw it in our demographic data when we looked at who was shopping and the items they were buying. So, like, we started to see it show up multiple places. And there's other kind of little moments like that showed up as well. Like, there, you know, when I was doing interviews with the store associates, I forget which region it was, but they were talking about how they have a, like, late 20s, early 30s Hispanic male shopper prototype, you know, persona that comes in often. And it was interesting because then when we looked at some of the things in the data, you could actually see that demographic in some of the survey data as well. We didn't pursue that particular one during this project, but I think it didn't show up as often as, like, the mom shopping for themselves at Hollister. But we did bring as many of those to the forefront as we could and had, like, you know, some heated debates about whether or not they should be included as a part of the customer story. Because at the end of the day, right, their job is to sell their products, and they need to make sure that there's a certain part of, you know, with the images of the products and how that resonates. Like, in a past life, I had also worked with the North Face, and we had had a conversation with them about how, like, the North Face fleece was kind of the preppy college person's outfit, like, back in the early 2000s or whatever. But, like, for the North Face, they couldn't cater to that audience because what made their brand unique was that, like, extreme hanging off the edge of the mountain stuff that, like, still inspired, you know, college 20-year-olds to wear their products. So it's an interesting dynamic of the data, the inspiration, the go-to-market plan, and all of those pieces. But yeah, just making sure too that, like, at least for me, making sure that I'm telling an accurate story, and then what the shareholders, stakeholders choose to do with it is really, really up to them. But making sure I'm doing my part.
Right. You're just the kind of bringer of the information, and what they choose to do with that data is kind of up to them. But I can see how it could be contentious because they have, you know, all this marketing that's geared towards teenagers, and all the sizes and the clothes are probably geared towards teenagers. And they're probably not thinking about the creating clothes for, like you said, the moms.
Yeah, exactly. We'll send the moms to the regular Abercrombie store.
Well, I think shifting gears again, I know you mentioned just in your previous, in your intro, that you did do a data science bootcamp. And I think you said the reason was because people were, you know, they saw you as a creative person that didn't understand the data, and this bootcamp kind of validated your experience with data. Curious if you can tell us more about what the bootcamp was like, and at the Spotify Songs project you worked on while you were at the bootcamp.
Yeah, absolutely. I have nothing but glowing, like, raving recommendations for this program. It's offered by Correlation One, and it's the Data Science for All program. And it was completely free and open to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they have a really strong commitment to getting folks with diverse backgrounds into the data science fields. And so it was an incredible experience. Like, my so from what I understand, it's fairly competitive, though, as you can imagine. I think they said in my cohort, 24,000 people applied, 1,000 got in, and then about 700 of us had to do a pre-Python thing in order to make it into the regular bootcamp. And then once we got in, it was 1,000 of us to start, and I want to say 600 or 700 finished the program. But so they also have robust experiences for placing you in jobs and getting you interviews with organizations and all of that, which was wonderful. But what I love the most was, like, my groups had such a huge range of people. Like, I had somebody who was a real life doctor and someone, you know, a couple of folks who were either, like, right in college or just finished college. And then someone else who was making a career pivot, who was kind of, you know, mid-20s. And then you know, just kind of this huge range of people. And it's funny because like one of my best like friends I made out of the program, he's like still in college. And it was just funny that we became such close friends and bonded over our love of our cats. but yeah, so the program itself, it was definitely rigorous. It was 9-hour Saturdays. They started at 7 a.m. my time, 3 or 4 hours of lecture in the morning. And then, you would break off into your groups and work on your group project. And, the other thing that, again, like loved about this program, the first hour lecture was focused on making sure you understood the problem you were going to solve. And then the second portion of the lecture was actually teaching you the code. And so I think that they really emphasize making sure that people coming out of the program are critically thinking about the work that they're doing. We also had a lot of wonderful guest speakers that helped us understand the context. And then just again, the huge emphasis too on the ethics around the work that we're all doing, analyzing data. I think coming out of that too, I read the book Weapons of Mass Destruction, which is super interesting if you enjoy reading about ethics and data science and AI, which was an area that I'd already had a lot of interest in coming in. But I really felt like I learned a ton, clearly, like hands-on in Python and SQL, learning different libraries. I loved the Seaborn Library. I wish I had reasons to use it today. But then, so we got broken off into projects, and some people did real projects that like impacted the world. Like they did great. There's so many like free data sources that you can pull from, you know, census data to financial aid data, et cetera. And so people did some really impactful projects. I was saying about, you know, just ways to help communities and, you know, the impact of transportation on communities of color. Our team went in a slightly different path, and we focused on the free data coming out of Spotify. And originally we would wanted to do, because this was in the throes of COVID, overlay COVID data with listening data to see if people's listening habits changed as like COVID cases rose in their areas. That was kind of the original vision of it. But we weren't able to get that user level data from Spotify, like by location. They give you data, you can get it right out of their API developers section of their site. But they give you all of the backend data on each of the individual songs. So Spotify has developed this numeric score for every song, like their danceability, how much energy it is, the tempo, et cetera. So there's, I want to say 12 different key features that they've developed, and they have numeric values to them. And so what our team did was we wanted to see if we could predict whether or not a song could be a hit based on those numeric features. And so the way that we did that was we kind of looked at our different data sources, and Billboard also has exportable data as well. And we felt like Billboard was a better representation of a song's success because it includes financial success in addition to streams and downloads and things like that. So what we wanted to do is see if those, the features that make things a hit on Spotify, could we then predict what would be a hit, like kind of looking at past data and then again in future data. And I hope that makes sense as I'm saying it out loud. But so we did, we all broke into different portions of our groups. We did a ton of exploratory data analysis, just looking at ways and finding correlations between different. I guess before that, we did have to clean a lot of data to get it all easy to digest. Because for example, some of the different scores had like a decimal point, you know, to the whatever, like 10 paces past the decimal point, and others were numeric scores that were over one. So we had to normalize all of the scores so we could actually look at them together. And then we did start to do the data analysis to see where there were correlations, where things were, you know, did t-tests and all those things to try to find. It was funny because I, again, majored in art, so I don't have a background in stats. So I was also having to kind of learn stats at the same time too. So if I speak like somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about, that's why.
You sound good to me.
Thanks. Thanks, YouTube. Another thing that is really helpful, I'm sure people who listen to your podcast are aware of it, but Stats Quest was a game changer for me. It was a really wonderful YouTube channel. But yeah, so we did some analysis there, and then started to do those. I know it's like the R graph. Sorry, I should have pulled it up so I know the name of it. But we did the test to see how predictable it could be. And we were able to predict within 70% accuracy that a song would be a hit on Billboard based on the key features that we had identified that had the highest correlation to one another. And it was kind of funny because at first we'd gotten it to 100%. And we had these lovely TAs who were like, you guys, that's not real. And then we went back in the data, we saw that Baby Shark had actually thrown off our entire algorithm.
Speaking of outliers, right?
Yes, exactly. So once we removed Baby Shark from the top songs, we were able to predict within 70% accuracy of, more traditional genres of rock and, rap and everything like that. But yeah, and then we this was my first time really getting to build my own from scratch dashboard in Tableau, and partnered really closely with another woman on our team who built this amazing radial graph view of ways that you could overlay the different songs between each other and see how their scores ranked against one another. And we really wanted to build a tool that people could use to kind of explore all these different music trends that we found, and look by genre, look by year, and just start to kind of immerse yourself in this data in a way that was really accessible.
That's super interesting. I'm curious, were there any similar to, I guess, your experience with the Abercrombie and Fitch or Hollister, where you found out moms were shopping? Were there any other outliers from your analysis that you thought was interesting for predicting whether or not a song would be a hit on Billboard?
I think the key to having a hit song on Billboard is to be The Weeknd.
Okay.
That really helps.
Okay.
Be The Weeknd. Yeah, I think he had hits. Be The Weeknd. Yeah, he had hits every year that we were analyzing. But there was, a few different scores that, we found were really key. And it was about kind of the upbeatness and energy in songs that had very high impact. And then the ones that had the most like negative correlation were things like acoustic versions of songs and songs that were speechy, which was kind of interesting because I think a lot of the rap music was classified as having a high speechiness score. So it like had different impacts depending on the ways that you looked at the data.
Very interesting. Well, I'll definitely include links to the boot camp and all the other things you mentioned about your experience here. And I guess kind of to wrap things up, something that you talked about with the boot camp, which I wanted to expand on a little more, was you said the first hour of lecture was about understanding the problem. And I'm wondering how the things you learned about how to understand a problem have carried over into your professional life. Because I think that's a really important part of data analysis journey, is just being a person that can understand and be curious about the problem itself before just diving into Excel formulas or Python. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's something that I think is so important and valuable, because I think in a lot of our roles, we get so focused on, can we do it? And we don't always think about, should we do it? And I think, especially as somebody who handles a lot of sensitive data, I think it's important to understand how it's going to be used, what happens as the implication of the thing that you're producing. We looked at OSHA data, or even like Airbnb data. We did a project on where we were able to kind of just understand like who you're creating this analysis for. What do they need from it? And how are they going to use what they learn from you? And I do think a lot of us have more responsibility and more stake in the impact of our analysis than we want to believe. Another really great book that, even though it's not data science related, but it's kind of lines into this whole point, is the book Ruined by Design. And it's really kind of a call to arms for creatives who create products and don't think about how they're having a negative impact on people's emotional well-being, how we're always like kind of getting, trying to get people to click on things, trying to get people to do more, spend more time in the product. But is that really a good thing for society? And so those of us that are, you know, solving problems with data, it is important that we understand the down the road implications for the analysis that we're doing. So not only to be great stakeholders with the people that you're working with and need the analysis, but also that you're a voice for those customers that are, you know, they're just a row of data, what you're looking at, but those are all people at the end of the day. And we need to remember that we are still kind of, we're using math as a way to understand them, but it's important not to lose sight of the humanity of all the things that we're building and what we create.
Yeah, for sure. That's really important to I think a key takeaway from what I've gathered from talking to you. I guess to wrap things up, there's anything else you want to mention in terms of people who are thinking about getting into data and not sure where to start, any kind of, you know, last minute tips that you might want to provide for potential data folks?
Yeah. I guess like, let's see. Take a design class. It is important.
Yes. Data storytelling, data visualization, all very important.
You can find them pretty easily, but even just so you understand the way that colors convey information and contrast tells stories, like there's so many elements to bringing your data to life that I think, again, I'm super grateful that I grew up that way and know all the nuances of color theory and all of that. But I do think that that makes the difference between dashboards that really make a difference in the way that things get communicated in organizations than if they're just kind of a typical bar chart. And then I think the other piece too, there was one more thing I was thinking of. Don't be afraid to start in Excel. I think it was so helpful that I taught myself pivot tables, I remember, on a flight. And having that foundation going into like a data science program was so valuable because you're essentially doing a lot of that data manipulation. And if you're comfortable in Excel, all of the concepts transfer over to Python so easily. It almost felt like, you know, once you kind of get the initial part, of course, was so challenging for me to learn the syntax and to get comfortable. But like, if you know the concepts from Excel and it becomes super easy where you understand what it is that you're building a lot easier.
Everything always comes back to Excel, like we said in the beginning.
It's so true. Yeah. And I've come from a family of Excel nerds. I think I'd shared my sister and my husband had started this company called Spreadsheet Bed Sheets for a minute. Because my sister's an accountant, my husband works in HR. And so he does all the HRIS analysis. So it helps to have friends that write formulas in their dreams and help you get better at your own Excel skills.
Yeah, I totally forgot about spreadsheets. I'll definitely include the link to that. Is it still live?
Okay. We need to bring it back. Okay. Yeah, we need to bring it back. We took a bit of a hiatus, but we'll come back. Yeah, we made bed sheets with Excel grid lines. And kind of, it was really just a fun project. I have a few in my basement still right now, but yeah, it was. I think we'll probably get it up and running again. Now it's a lot easier to do more print-on-demand things than it was when we did it 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. That's amazing. Well, Kara, thank you so much for your time today. I took a bunch of notes, and I'm really excited to publish this episode eventually. And we appreciate you taking the time out of your day as well to talk with us about your career from creative and into data.
Yeah, thanks, Al. It's been really just wonderful and great talking to you too. I appreciate all your great questions.
Thank you so much.